From 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Our Project Milwaukee series, Segregation Matters, wraps up with a panel discussion, bringing together people from across the community to talk about what we lose out on from being divided and how we might turn the tide.
There's this common misperception that people self-segregate. That's completely untrue. There's never been self-segregation. The only people that have the ability to self-segregate are white people.
The chances of the young men that I worked with today in the kitchen at Body and Soul, if they brought all their beautiful brownness into some of those job interviews, they're not getting the job.
My colleague here talked about it. Sometimes we liked to embrace and sit around with just the people we like to be comfortable with. And sometimes if you want to get things done, you got to be around people who make you less than comfortable.
Stay tuned for the Project Milwaukee Segregation Matters Forum next on Lake Effect, right after the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Bonnie North. For the past week, WUWM has taken a comprehensive look at segregation in the Milwaukee area in our latest Project Milwaukee series, Segregation Matters. Between reports on WUWM News and interviews on Lake Effect, we've looked at how segregation can be quantified, how it feels, its costs, and effects on the community. On Monday, we pulled together a group of people from around the community to talk about the nature of the problem and the first steps we might take to reverse the trends. The event was produced in partnership with Milwaukee Magazine as part of the MilMag Live series, and it was co-hosted by Lake Effect's Mitch Teich and WUWM's Latoya Dennis. The conversation opened with a chat about what the Milwaukee area is losing out on by being so demographically divided. We hear first from Nate Holton, who's the Deputy Chief of Staff for the Milwaukee County Executive, Chris Abley.
I would say vitality and sustainability. When we are as segregated as we are, we have a shortage of interactions amongst folks, a shortage of the sharing of ideas, of information, of capital, of access to jobs. It's almost like a basketball team where the point guard can pass to the small forward but can't pass to the center, and the power forward can pass to the shooting guard but can't pass to anybody else. That team's not going to be very good on offense because not everybody can pass to everybody else. In Milwaukee, people don't pass to each other. We are all intensely segregated in our own little areas. We talk to people who look like us, who sound like us, who have similar ideas as us. And the things that we miss out in the long run, and we can get into this more, but can be devastating to the future of Milwaukee, because ultimately we are on an international stage competing with metro areas, not just nationally, but internationally. And we have to be able to attract talent. We have to be able to thrive economically. And if folks aren't sharing those sorts of ideas and capital and access to jobs, eventually we're going to fall by the wayside as the competition gets fiercer.
Nate Holton, thanks. Just to keep things visually interesting, let's go to the other end of the panel, and let's meet Dennis Walton. Dennis, tell us what you do, and what do you think Milwaukee loses out on by being as hyper-segregated as it is?
Well, first of all, thank you for even having me here to even have the conversation. And I think just looking out at the audience, I think we're making some inroads on changing things, because I see a pretty diverse crowd here, which is, it's a pleasure to see that. But when we talk, my name, again, I'm Dennis Walton. I work with the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. And I'm also a member of the 53206 Amani community, a 20-year organizer there. You know, living my whole life in the 53206 community and zip code, I've experienced, you know, that hyper-segregation at its finest or at its worst. But I think when we talk about segregation as an issue, when you look throughout Milwaukee and our community, you know, one of the most beautiful things about Milwaukee is that we are a city of ethnicities, you know, and that makes up our wealth. And you have segregation all over Milwaukee in different pockets. And I don't think that necessarily segregation is the issue, but when you have segregation for certain pockets where there's a certain type of social engineering within those communities. I think that that's where it becomes a problem, because segregation as far as people maintaining an identity and being familiar and comfortable with one another, excuse me.
We did talk about this.
Just a reminder at this time to please silence all cell phones.
Sorry about that. We're integrated now. But again, I think when you talk about segregation and people being comfortable amongst each other, that's not a problem. You know, if you look at many of the different ethnicities in Milwaukee, you look at the Jewish community, you look at Hispanic community, you look at the white community, you know, you have people who stay within themselves, but they are not cut off a lot of times from their identity or the access to the institutions to help them overcome their obstacles. And when you have segregation that consists of a social engineering of poverty and lack of education, lack of jobs, and lack of access, and you know, that's also orchestrated through laws and policies, then we talk about segregation, disenfranchising of people, and I think that that's where you miss out at.
So just to restate what you're saying, you're kind of saying this, it's not so much the segregation between, say, black and white, it's the segregation of people who have opportunity and people who don't.
Well, I think that when you don't have equal access to resources, then that's when you have a problem. You know, and I think a lot of people who are comfortable around their own people, that's not an issue. It's just when you're separate and you're unequal.
I guess we'll go to Dr. Pamela Malone.
I am an educator. I'm an academic, and so I needed to tell you what my biases were. I don't do academia. I am an academic, and I have always been, so that's my bias. Now, regarding, I teach at the Milwaukee Area Technical College currently, and I teach sociology, including criminology, African-American social thought and culture, juvenile delinquency, intro to sociology, contemporary American society, and a host of other social problems. Regarding your question, because you all told me I couldn't prepare anything, and it's hard for an academic to speak without preparing something. So I will address this. What do we lose out on because of the segregation in Milwaukee? And there are myriad things that we lose out on, but I'm going to list talent as number one. And I have to list that as number one because we may have the person in our midst who may be African-American or Latino, who may find the cure to cancer, but we're not gonna know if we're busy discriminating in education based on the interaction between race and class. Another thing I would point out, and I'm sure we're all aware of this, is a sense of safety, you know, that we read every day and we hear about every day. Some of that is, I teach young people, and if they don't feel safe, okay, then they act out in ways that make you not feel safe. And we have to understand that, okay? They don't just act out like they do on me for no reason. Okay, so all of us, I live three blocks away and I wasn't about to walk, okay? So we're losing out on a sense of safety that was created by some areas I'll get into later, because if we're gonna talk about segregation, we also have to talk about discrimination, and we have to talk about racism, both individual and institutional. And we also lose out on being a world-class city. When I was young, we had over 700,000 people. We used to have the same population density as New York City. So we're losing out on being a world-class city. We really do have a lot to offer if we would speak to each other long enough to offer it. So I'll end with, so we want a thriving metropolitan area, and we're working on it downtown. And if we could alleviate at least some segregation, okay, because social change doesn't mean that you eliminate all of something. But we've got to make a lot more progress than we've been making now. So there I'm through.
Let's meet another panelist, Paul Decker.
Good evening, Milwaukee. It's kind of interesting being here and listening, and I probably got to give a little bit more of my background so that as I comment as we go through the show, you won't look at my title and think, why is this guy saying that? I grew up in Port Washington and put myself through college at Whitewater and then ended up in Chicago. And I worked for a company called Xerox, you may have heard of that, and my territory was the south side of Chicago. So I dealt with a lot of business people that didn't look like me, but we ended up getting along extremely well. I took a lot of lessons from having that territory in Chicago, both about dealing with people, understanding the streets, and never being afraid to walk down any street the rest of my life. Because if you can make it in the south side of Chicago, believe me, you can do anything. And I had many friends during the course of my lifetime that would make comments about that, that I had a certain sense of what was around me. And a lot of that came from understanding that people are people, and I did learn that as a very good lesson. It was very fortunate. During my career, and I never expected any of this, I wasn't exactly a good planner. My family didn't value education. I valued learning, and that made all the difference in the world. The learning I did then took me and propelled me on life. I was in sales and sales and marketing, got into management, got moved all over the place. Then got to be able to travel all over the place. And probably the most important thing was I traveled internationally. And then I lived in Chicago, lived in LA, lived other places before, and traveled before moving back to the Milwaukee area. And I got to say, one thing that has really ticked me off being back here is I don't understand all this consternation over lines. And now, at this point in my later part of my life, I reluctantly, through somebody else, got on a planning commission, ask a lot of questions, because those of us in sales, that's what you, if you really do well, you ask a lot of questions. You're always trying to please and benefit your customers, your clients. They made a comment that said, you know, you might be good in elective politics, which is something I had actually heard on the south side of Chicago. And at the last minute, very reluctantly, I got into elective politics. Within the last 9 years of being in elective politics, within 3 years, I became chairman of the Waukesha County Board of Supervisors. I didn't expect it, didn't anticipate it. There were many people with more experience on that board than me. Since then, I'm now chair of 5 different boards or commissions or things that I'm on or asked to be on. I talk about the fact that if you're going to learn to be a leader, you might learn by dealing with people as people, how to serve people, how to be genuine. So I think the talk, when it comes down to what is causing the challenges in Milwaukee and how it hurts us. I saw the same thing worldwide. The great metropolitan areas, as Nate has said, where we're in competitiveness and competitive situations, global economy-wise, they have some of the similarities that we do, but not as overtly as we do. We can't let these divides, as the other panelists have said, get in our way. We have to acknowledge them, but we have to understand we need everybody in the boat. We really do, folks. We need every brain that we can possibly have in this great metropolitan area to be competitive in the global economy. Everyone. It's amazing to me because if you look at the economy that America has built, and we did it with less than 50% of the people actually participating. We've only got women involved in the last 2 or 3 generations, and we're still holding people back. If we ever get to use all the brains, this place will be tremendous. So let's let Milwaukee be one of the first ones to do that and show the rest of the world how it's done.
All right, we're going to jump to Reggie Jackson.
Good evening, Milwaukee. I'm not a baseball player. I'm actually terrible at baseball. I'm the head grill for America's Black Holocaust Museum. I've been with the museum since back in 2002. And I've had the ability, thanks to being mentored by Dr. James Cameron, the founder of the museum, to travel around the country talking about race, racism, African-American history. And so I've been working on a project related to the history of segregation in Milwaukee for about the last year or so. I've done a couple of public presentations. My next one will actually be in 2 weeks on March 20th at the Tippecanoe Library. And what I've done is I wanted to know more about how we became this most segregated place. There are a lot of misconceptions, I think, that are out there. Based on the research I did, I found that a lot of the things that we think we know about how we became segregated are actually not true. And I cover those in the presentation I did. But in terms of what Milwaukee is missing, I think there are a lot of things that we're missing out on by being segregated. Number one is that we're losing, just as several of the panelists have said, we're losing talent. We have this huge brain drain of young black people who graduate from college, leave Milwaukee, and never ever come back to the city again. The same in the Latino community. We're having people that are matriculating through our school system, doing well, going on to higher education, and leaving the city and just forgetting about the city. So we lose out tremendously in that respect. But more importantly, I think the main thing that we lose out on is we lose out on a sense of our shared humanity. One of the things Dr. Cameron talked about, that he wanted our country to become this country that supports this idea of us being one single and sacred nationality, instead of being in all of these little boxes separated from one another. Segregation puts you in a box, and it's not just a physical box in terms of the spaces that you occupy, but it's the spaces your mind occupies as well. Because what happens is you don't spend time with people from other communities. You make assumptions about those people. You live off the stereotypes of those people. So you make assumptions that every time you see a young black person with a hoodie on, well, they're probably coming to rob you. And every time you see a young Hispanic, then maybe he's an illegal immigrant. So you have all of these negative perceptions of people based on stereotypes because you never spend any time having conversations and getting to know people from other communities. I tell my students, I'm a seventh grade teacher, I tell my students, the best thing you can do for yourself is to get out of that little bubble that you live in. Go into other people's bubbles, explore the bubbles that they live in. And so here in Milwaukee, we don't allow people to do that. 91% of blacks that live in this area, in the metro area, live in the city of Milwaukee. 91%. 94% of blacks in Milwaukee County live in the city of Milwaukee. And that is an absolute shame because these people are not having any interactions with people from outside the city of Milwaukee. People outside the city of Milwaukee are not having interactions with them. And as a result of that, people have these perceptions that Milwaukee is like this horrible place. You know, I can remember when the events happened in Sherman Park last year. I live in Sherman Park. I live three blocks away from where Seville Smith was shot. I live five blocks away from where the gas station was set on fire. And I thought, based on the coverage that I saw in the news, the national and the local, that the whole city was on fire. And it was really just basically five or six fires that were set. So people have this fear of Milwaukee. And I tell people all the time, one of the common things that I hear people say is that if they live on the east side of Milwaukee, if they want to travel out to Mayfair Mall, instead of just getting in their car and driving straight down North Avenue or straight down Burleigh or straight down Locust to get out there, they'll get on Interstate 43, go to downtown, get on 94 going west, go to 45 going north, go all the way to Mayfair Mall, burning all kinds of unnecessary gas because they're afraid of what's going to happen to them. And I'm like, what are you afraid of? And so what happens is when you get out of that little bubble, and there are a lot of people in this audience tonight that I've met over the past several years that I probably would have never met had I not been doing the work that I do. People from other communities that I've met, engaged with, built relationships with. And it's the greatest thing I've ever done because it allows me to be able to kind of see them as a human being instead of as that label that we put on people. So let's get past the labels and see people as human beings and help make Milwaukee be the city that it really should be.
Well, we have one more panelist to meet, Venus Williams. Why don't you tell us what you do and what you think we're losing out on?
Good evening. Is there an elder in the room who can give me permission to speak? Thank you. Those of you who have heard me speak before all know that that's a setup question because then you're responsible for anything I say. There you go. It just dawned on me that you have Reggie Jackson and Venus Williams sitting next to each other.
They told me it wasn't a celebrity.
And I have no eye-hand coordination whatsoever. So I do not play tennis, and he does not play baseball. And yet we're here because we love this city. I am the executive director of Alice's Garden and the Body and Soul Healing Arts Center. And all that means is that I pull the most weeds and sweep the most floors. To address the question of what are we missing by not living amongst one another, probably the biggest gift that we're missing is watching our children play together. There is so much that we can learn when we observe children at play. We can learn what pure joy looks like, no matter what color we are. We can learn how children embrace one another because of differences, not in spite of them. How children want to mimic each other and not label one another. How children want to celebrate their differences, not because it's, but wow. You know. So by not living amongst one another, and there are some reasons why some of us shouldn't. I want to be clear on that, too. There are some reasons why some of us should not live around each other, and we'll get to that if you will allow me later. But we need to, when we are able and when it is appropriate, to live around one another, because until our children play together more, because our children grow up to be presidents, our children grow up to join groups and clubs and clans, our children grow up and become adults who we are either going to celebrate or act like we had nothing to do with them. And so we need to be able to be around one another so that we can learn from the children, and so that the children can learn to not have the fear that sits in this room and in this city. Being with one another, I can best see all of those stereotypes and those isms and all of that stuff that keeps us apart and makes you afraid of me dissolve, because children teach us better than, I'm sorry, doctor, any educator, right? Any parent, right? Dr. Malone's like, what is she talking about over there? We learn more fully, more appropriately, and more honestly from children. So when we live with each other, well, not with me, not living with me, but when we live around one another, we learn more deeply from our children.
We'll return to our Project Milwaukee Forum on Segregation right after this short break, so stick around. Lake Effect continues in a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio. Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Let's get back to our Project Milwaukee live forum on segregation recorded earlier this week at the back room at Collectivo on Prospect Avenue. Our Segregation Matters panel was moderated by WUWM's Latoya Dennis and Mitch Tyke. On the panel were Paul Decker from the Waukesha County Board of Supervisors, Pamela Malone of the Milwaukee Area Technical College, Reggie Jackson with America's Black Holocaust Museum, Nate Holton of the Milwaukee County Executive's Office, Venus Williams from Alice's Garden Urban Farm, and Dennis Walton of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative.
Since we've been talking about what it is that we're missing out on when it comes to segregation, what's the first thing that, the first step that we need to take when it comes to removing those barriers? And any of you can take that.
Well, I think when we talk about removing the barriers, I mean, again, I think first of all, we have to recognize that each ethnicity and group is a special group of people. That's really important, that has brought forth so many contributions through who they are, and I think that that needs to be appreciated and understood. That's really important. And again, when we talk about the first steps, we don't need to condemn people because they're comfortable being around one another. You know, there's sometimes I only want to be around black people, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, because there's a cultural significance that exists when I'm around Black African people, you know, and there's a beauty and a joy that comes from that. I think, and as I've been able to experience other cultures, you know, who worship and fellowship amongst each other and see the beauty within their collective identities, it's helped me gain a greater appreciation for their strengths as well. And I think that when we look at each other and our differences, it's fine to be different, and it's fine to not always integrate with one another, but to have a collective respect for each other as human beings, and to recognize the strengths that exist within all people, so that when you do interact with them, you can appreciate who they are. I think that that's where we have to get to, a place where we can accept the fact that we may be different, we can accept the fact that we may be separate at times, but we still have to have an overall appreciation for all human life, you know, and I think that that appreciation and that understanding becomes really important.
I don't know that voluntary belongs in there when we're talking about racial segregation, because there's a difference between segregation and separation, just as the gentleman pointed out. I know a lot of people, I mean, Texas wanted to secede for partially racial reasons. We could have Puerto Rico and not even change the flag. Okay, but there are both whites and blacks who really would prefer to, let's face it, be separatists. I don't happen to be a separatist, but that academically is a whole school of thought. Okay, so I think we've got to differentiate between this gentleman wanting to be with his friends, or even my nationalist friends wanting to be separate, and segregation. Those are two different things. But so in order to really address it, though, I think, again, we have to address discrimination. We've got to address unequal treatment, in addition to the stereotypes, in addition to the prejudice, although, quite frankly, many of us don't mind if people want to be prejudiced as long as they don't act on it. We've got to deal with racism. And I might as well tell you, on the 11th, over at Washington High, Michael, you can put it in paper, that MATC has been doing a diversity forum, and I'm going to be keynoting institutional racism. So you're all invited. I got flyers in here, too. But you can't talk about segregation if you don't deal with those other issues, if you don't deal with those other concepts, if you don't deal with prejudice, if you don't deal with ignorance, if you don't deal with ethnocentrism. Okay. And America is having an extremely difficult time dealing with those.
We have Reggie, and we have Paul Decker as well.
One of the things I discovered doing the research about the history of Milwaukee segregation, there's this common misperception that people self-segregate. That's completely untrue. There's never been self-segregation. The only people that have the ability to self-segregate are white people, because they have been in charge of the institutions that created segregation. So give you some examples of how segregation happened. Racial restrictive covenants were written by white people to maintain all white communities. Black people didn't write those. Asian people, Latino people didn't write those. So that was a tool that was used. The Federal Housing Authority drew redlining maps, which allowed continuing segregation to occur. You had the Federal Housing Authority actually giving advice to people around the country on how to maintain segregated neighborhoods, how to use racial restrictive covenants. You've had, since 1968, a federal law which makes housing discrimination illegal. We've had an ordinance in Milwaukee since 1968 which makes housing discrimination illegal. However, neither of those has been heavily enforced. In fact, Mitt Romney's dad tried to enforce the federal law under the Nixon administration, and he was shut down immediately. And so when we look at why segregation continues to happen, it doesn't continue to happen because people choose to live where they choose to live. It continues to happen because there are barriers in place. If you look at Milwaukee, Milwaukee is very unique of the other big cities that are segregated. What makes Milwaukee different from all of the others is the fact that in other big cities like Los Angeles or Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, places of that nature, you have a fairly significant presence of blacks in the suburbs, in those communities. We don't have that in Milwaukee. If you look at the 18 suburbs of Milwaukee, 16 of the 18 suburbs of Milwaukee in Milwaukee County use racial restrictive covenants to maintain all white communities. And as a result of that, from years and years ago, these racial restrictive covenants were written in the 20s, 30s. Many of them extended. They had an end date. Many of them extended into the 2000s. One that I found in South Milwaukee was set to expire in 2024. So the result of those racial restrictive covenants and other things that occurred has maintained this segregation perpetually, year after year, decade after decade. And so when you look at those 18 suburbs of Milwaukee today, what you find is you only have three of them that have a black population more than 5%. When you look at the exurban counties, Waukesha County, Ozaukee County, Washington County, all of them are 95% or higher white population. So there's very little diversity in those communities. It's not accidental. It didn't just happen simply because people chose to live in specific neighborhoods. When you look at where blacks lived in Milwaukee in the 1940s, it's very similar to the places they live today. Not because that's where they chose to live, because they couldn't live in other places. So when we talk about fixing the problem, one of the things that I think, and Nate and I talked briefly about this backstage, is that we have to have elected officials that actually do their job. We have to hold them accountable. We can't keep electing people who allow housing discrimination to continue to occur in Milwaukee and the regional area on a regular basis without enforcing that ordinance that's been on the books since 1968. It's been darn near 50 years, and we still haven't made much progress. I looked at a special census of Milwaukee in 1975. One of the big misperceptions about the open housing marches in 1967 through 1968. Black people were marching to the south side of Milwaukee because they wanted to live on the south side of Milwaukee, right? So they're risking their lives crossing the 16th Street Viaduct in an attempt to move to the south side of Milwaukee. There's a special census done in Milwaukee in 1975 as a result of the lawsuit that was filed because Milwaukee schools are segregated. And when you look at that, and you look at the number of blacks that were living in neighborhoods on the south side, 8 years after the open housing marches and the open housing ordinance, in practically every single one of those neighborhoods, there were single digits of blacks living in those communities. So what difference did the open housing marches make? What difference did the ordinance make? It didn't make a difference. What blacks did, they couldn't move south, they couldn't move east. What they did is they moved north and west, and that's what you continue to see in Milwaukee. Blacks are moving further north and further west. So we can talk about solutions, but a big part of the solution is holding people accountable for upholding the laws that are on the books on the local level, the state level, and the federal level. Well,
we happen to have an elected official on the panel, one from the suburbs.
Not to call you
and
out.
I'm sure that when some people in the audience saw me up here, saw that I represented Waukesha County, and I will bet this, because this is the challenge that we all have. There were some of you in the audience, what's that guy doing up there talking about segregation in Milwaukee, right? Right. It goes both ways, folks. What you just talked about doesn't happen unless there's a dialogue. Unless we're here talking about this, we don't see 124th Street as the same line that some people in Milwaukee County do. We've said this repeatedly, the county executive, myself, on a lot of different things, and for a lot of good reasons. We don't have a lot of reasons that segregation happened, and I can tell you this from where I lived and what I've done. Fear. And, you know, my colleague here talked about it. Sometimes we liked to embrace and sit around with just the people we like to be comfortable with. And sometimes, if you want to get things done, you got to be around people who make you less than comfortable. Change is tough, okay? I consult on business for my career, and I teach as well as I train. And I have got nieces and nephews going, geez, Uncle Paul, at your age, why are you doing all that stuff? That's ageism. For one thing, my brain is just as good as theirs. In some cases, I know it's better. But we do that to ourselves in every way, shape, and form. The nice thing is, and I mean this in all sincerity, We're moving into an economy in this area that's not going to allow us to do that. We've got to uphold that law. I can guarantee you that if somebody moves into the city of Waukesha, and most of the municipalities, there's 37 of them in Waukesha County, that the discrimination will not be because of what they look like. It's going to be, can you afford it? Where do you work? And how much do you want to be part of our community? That's it. You want to be part of the community, you want to give to the community, you pay your taxes, you're more than welcome. We've got more jobs than people, and that's part of our challenge. So the beauty is we've had to overcome this almost by, and I hate to say it, by default. I wish we could have done it in the way you talked about it, as children do, more natural. But now we're doing it because it's economically prudent. But you take any way you can to get progress, folks. And change is going to be tough. And we all are going to run into something that will make us feel a little less than what we are, but we've got to overcome that. The biggest thing is, how much do we want to build a better community? That's up to us individually. And can we do that?
So, Paul, can I jump in and ask you a question here?
Sure.
Just to follow up. And that is, I've spoken to a number of people who have said that part of the ways in which communities keep people of color out is because they can't afford to live there necessarily. So how important is affordable housing?
And I would agree with that. I think one of the challenges is when we look at, the great thing is our employers now are looking for all kinds of employees. And there are people here that I work with on the transportation transit situation in the greater Milwaukee area. And one of the things is 6 years ago when I first became chair, if I would have been anybody in where I live and I would have said, oh, I'm working on transit to get more people to work, get people from Milwaukee County out to work in the jobs we have open. There are people in Waukesha County that go, why are you doing that? And because now the employers are telling them, we don't have a choice. And I, like I said, it's not the best way, but it is the way. We have talent and we have capability and we need to train people. And that's what we have to do. It's by the need of employers to bring people in to train them. I will tell you a story I've told from last year. And I was talking to some people in Brookfield, and they run a company. It's all about programming and doing other things within the computer space. And they told me how desperate they are for people. And basically, you could be green with eight arms, and you could get a job being a .NET programmer. Now, I have no idea what a .NET programmer does or is, but I know that if you have the talent and the capability, you're hired. Because that's how we've become tough. And I want to say something that Reggie said. It's not just, we're not just losing the young people that are Latino or black from this area. We're losing young people from our area who move out of this area because it's not dynamic enough. And we're losing them to Minneapolis and Chicago, so we're not losing them because of the weather. So the challenge becomes, what do we do to make this area dynamic? And that is up to those of us that are in positions that can make this happen. We will enforce the law. And that's the greatest thing we've got going for us, is we will enforce the law. Now there's a dynamic economic need to be integrated because the workforce has to be the workforce, and we no longer care. But the doctor, what she said as far as education, we talked in the green room, the biggest thing is that we have to also accept that today's employers need employees that can show up ready to work. They have to have great language skills, reading skills, and math skills, because most of the jobs have, even welding now is a technical job. So this is the opportunities we have in front of us. How we take advantage of them, that's up to a number of us to make sure we can all work together.
So we just met. How you doing?
How you doing?
Okay. And I know you want to believe that everything you said was true, right? But the truth is, an alien who is green, and what did you say, has all those tentacles, eight arms, has a better job of getting being accepted in Waukesha than my black son. And so, and that's not your fault. right? There's generations of this. So almost on a weekly basis, you know, because of the agricultural work that we do, because of the young people that we work with on a daily basis, we get calls from companies who want to know how to work with black men, which is just a foolish statement to begin with, right? So the truth of the matter is that fear that you named is what divides all of us, right? And until people of white can understand that people of color, we don't want your house, we don't want your children, we don't even want your jobs. We want what we're owed, and all we're owed is equal humanity. And so if we can get beyond that fear, but there are people who will say to me, you know, I want to hire, you know, we want to hire young black males to work in our business. I'm trying not to name businesses here. What do we say to them? I'm like, well, what would you say to little young white boys? I mean, so this absurd fear is what stagnates humanity. Right? And so what's happening now across the country that has people of white just losing your minds is that there's someone in office who represents the highest of fear and absurdity. And so now, maybe, I think that's going to be the biggest catalyst to all of this change that we need. But if we're going to be up here, you know, we have to be honest and say that my sons, my husband, you don't play baseball and don't matter, so we're not welcome. We're not welcome economically.
I have to dispel that.
And
only because
I'm not finished. I didn't interrupt you, so I need you to sit there a little bit more. Because there's just been some deliberate lines. But I'm not going to pick on you, because we don't have to go as far as Waukesha to talk about unequal housing. You know, we can talk about the housing that's being built right here in the city of Milwaukee that I can't afford, that a lot of us cannot afford. So this isn't about picking on you. The truth of the matter is we have a nation and we have a city that's coming back to its original brown hue. All of the hues. And this fear is what is propelling even the deepest of segregations. So for those of us who want to dismantle all of these things that Dr. Malone talked about, there are some of us who want to dismantle that, but not enough of us want to do the dismantling. So we are comfortable. You know, so we talk about how, so we in our community, I'm going to speak for my circle and my friends, we talk about how people of white now, as you construct all of these condos downtown, and how they get higher and higher and higher and higher away from us. Where are you going to go, to the moon? You know, and so, but you're blocking not just a view of all of creation, you're blocking a view of the rest of us. So I just had to say that the chances of the young men that I worked with today in the kitchen of Body and Soul, if they brought all their beautiful brownness into some of those job interviews, they're not getting the job.
Well, I was just at a job forum and I work at Waukesha County Technical College, and our culinary arts program was just what you talked about. And what the dean was very proud of was the fact that it was, for WCTC, quite an aggregate of different people, and that's how they referred to them, and they were all getting jobs. I can't make up for the prejudice and the fear of the past in Waukesha County or any place else. There's just an economic reality that people are having to open up to, regardless whether they wanted to in the past or not. And we all have to take advantage of that. And I understand, I couldn't afford most of the housing in Milwaukee myself, but I understand that there's a dynamic, as Mayor Baird has talked about, that's bringing Milwaukee and what it's attractive, and that's good. What we try to remind them of, Milwaukee's part of a great metropolitan area, and we have to become a metropolitan area where people move in with freedom, with capability, with, you know, that jobs are open and that they have the ability to go there. We need a mobile, agile, learned workforce. and we need to be able to have them move them wherever we need them throughout the metropolitan area. Jobs are going to continue to hopscotch based on how companies do. That's just part of economics. Right now, the good fortune thing is we've got an economy that the jobs are growing, and our population is at the point where we need to feed it with what we have, and we have people in 5-3 in your zip code and other zip codes that, by gosh, if we have to help, whatever we have to do to get them work. One other thing, and I have to be, you know, I have some inside information on how this all works. My wife happens to be the educational director at Racine Correctional. So I understand that anybody can learn and take effect. It's just how we treat them. And I understand the backgrounds to a lot of people, and I understand what you talked about, that there are people, they make a, like I said earlier, they make a quick judgment based on all the wrong characteristics except for what's inside and the capabilities somebody to go to work and want to be part of their community.
All right, so. So, briefly, and then Nate Holton, I think, had something to add as well.
I didn't bring my personal life in, but what I'm saying is, having taught college for 35 years, including at MATC, and trained a lot of the workforce, and trained tens of thousands of young black males and white, whatever, everybody, cultural capital or competencies in language and in certain skills is necessary for everyone. You wouldn't be where you are. Nobody on this panel would be where they are if they didn't have competencies in language. I'm not saying melt. You know, black folks don't melt real well, because in order to assimilate, the assimilatees have to be accepted by the assimilators. And that's not, you know, gonna happen. And I understand that. So what we're looking for is a pluralistic society that cannot be ethnocentric. But competencies in language and other skills are important. And by the way, I get all my kids $17, $18 an hour jobs, and some of them have felonies.
All right, Nate Holton, and then I think we have a line of questions out the door.
Yeah, the original question is about how do we break down barriers when it comes to segregation. And, you know, what we have to do, I think, is kind of cut through the garbage and the flowery language, the feel-good language, and some of the common things that we say in these sorts of conversations, and we have to get past just blaming Waukesha or white people or politicians or whatever, and I've done my share of all those things, so I can say that. And we have to look within ourselves, first off, and not just in a nice touchy-feely kind of way, like what am I going to do to talk to somebody who doesn't look like me, but what am I going to do that's tangible, okay? Because segregation and social justice issues, they're all a thicket of the same issue. When you look at income disparities, education disparities, all of these things that we suffer here in Milwaukee, segregation included, they're all the same problem. All right, the other day, a couple of weeks ago, we had a local election here for municipal court. Municipal court is where you go when you get a speeding ticket. It's where you go if you get a loitering ticket. It's where you go if you have a mental illness and you're walking down the street and all of a sudden the cop gives you a ticket. It is the entryway into the criminal justice system, and it functions in a way where it has a significant impact on social justice in Milwaukee. It is locally elected. It's City of Milwaukee, okay? City of Milwaukee residents vote on this election. You can have a tangible impact on social justice in Milwaukee by educating yourself on what this court does and on the people who are running for it, and go and express your right as a citizen to vote. Our turnout was 9%, okay? So people come to this sort of event and nod and clap and yeah, you know, I'm gonna, you know, do something positive, but we don't go out and vote when it comes to situations where we actually have control. A lot of our issues are beyond the city of Milwaukee. When we come to, you know, reinforcing housing laws in Waukesha, when it comes to revenue from the state, things like this, you know, the city of Milwaukee and our voters, we can only do so much because we only have so much power. But when we do have power, we have to actually use it. And until we do that, we're not going to be all that serious. We're up here having these conversations about segregation in housing, segregation in education, okay? Adam Carr is involved in the 50-year anniversary of the housing marches. Okay, 50 years ago, we were marching for that same stuff. And we're having the exact same conversations today. And it's because we come here and have these feel-good type of conversations, and then we forget about it, and we don't exercise our power. And a couple years later, we're having the same conversation, because at the end of the day, for most of us, we don't care enough about this to actually do something about it because we're too comfortable with how things are. And let me just get personal for 1 second, okay? I'm born and raised in Milwaukee, and I'm biracial. My father is in the audience right over there. The first African-American fire chief of the Milwaukee Fire Department, by the way. My mom's white. All right, now anywhere I go in Milwaukee, I'm an outsider. Okay, if I'm on the east side, I'm an outsider. If I dare go to the suburbs, which I don't do very often, I am definitely an outsider. But when I go to 53206, I'm an outsider there too, because look at my skin, it's light. Listen to how I talk, all right? You talk white. Right? Everyone wants to put me in some sort of box. And when we come to, you know, attracting, maintaining talent in Milwaukee, I feel that very personally, because when I went to school, I didn't think I was ever gonna come back. I left Milwaukee and I thought I was never coming back because of these sorts of issues. In other cities, you have a thriving black middle class where you can feel comfortable if you're somebody like myself, okay? And that's one of the issues that we face here is a lack of talent in the African-American community. So it all starts with actually empowering ourselves and getting real, and not just talking about it, but doing it, figuring out what power levers we do have and then pulling those levers.
Our Project Milwaukee Segregation Matters live forum was recorded in the Collectivo back room in cooperation with Milwaukee Magazine. The panelists were Dennis Walton of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, Venus Williams from Alice's Garden Urban Farm, Paul Decker from the Waukesha County Board of Supervisors, Dr. Pamela Malone of the Milwaukee Area Technical College, Reggie Jackson with America's Black Holocaust Museum, and Nate Holton of the Milwaukee County Executive's Office. The forum was moderated by WUWM's LaToya Dennis and Mitch Tyke. Annalise Hensel is the executive producer of Project Milwaukee, and the entire event was made possible by the combined efforts of WUWM and Milwaukee Magazine, along with much appreciated help from Collectivo Coffee. All of our Segregation Matters stories and interviews are available at WUWM.com. I'm Bonnie North. Lake Effect is produced by Mitch Tyke, Audrey Nowakowski, Joy Powers, and me, along with assistance from Mayan Silver and Sarah Matthews. We also get reporting from Susan Bentz and Rachel Morello. Michelle Matternowski provides web support, and John Strelecki does our audio engineering. Willie Porter wrote the theme music. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and please join us again tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.